I first started covering Elise Stefanik in 2018 and 2019 for my book called The Ones We've Been Waiting For. And actually, a revised and updated paperback is coming out next week. So if listeners are interested in learning more about Elise Stefanik, that paperback is coming out shortly. So when I first started researching her, I called, I spoke to her several times for the book. I called almost everyone I could find who knew her. And the universal consensus among almost everybody who knew Stefanik was that she was highly intelligent, deeply ambitious, and also had a strong moral compass and a deep sense of integrity. And that was coming from people, you know, who were her Republican allies, but it was also coming from people who were politically different from her. Maybe, you know, including even some people who had run against her, said that they were impressed by her character. So one of the people I spoke to was Melissa DeRosa, who is a top aide to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, a major Democratic operative in New York. And Melissa and Elise were very close friends when they were in high school and middle school, actually. Melissa DeRosa was one of a very few old classmates who was at Elise Stefanik's wedding. And when I spoke to Melissa back in 2019, she told me all about how she and Elise had this long bipartisan friendship. And Elise was so morally supportive, especially in the sort of difficult world of New York politics, which can be very hard charging, very rough and tumble, and that she would sometimes call her for support when she felt like she was getting attacked or she was, really under the gun for something that had happened politically, and that she felt that Elise was always sort of a supportive friend to her in those moments. And then, you know, flash forward 2 years, you know, through the 2018 midterms, through the 2019 impeachment in which Elise Stefanik played a major role, and then through the 2020 election, now that friendship has totally frayed. And the reason it's important is not because we really care so much about these two women and whether they like each other anymore, but it's just, it was very interesting to me, this relationship which had been sort of a model for bipartisan congeniality, which was something that Elise Stefanik had been really well known for, actually, had really soured into mutual resentment and actually all-out attacks on each other on social media.
And that unfolds quite clearly through a Twitter thread that you've put out, and you're sharing some of the tweets that they have sent back and forth. In one of them, DeRosa suggests that Stefanik has sold her soul to the devil.
Yeah, to put it quite clearly, 2 years ago, Stefanik told me that she and DeRosa were close friends and remain friends. DeRosa told me that Stefanik was always so morally supportive and was somebody who had really been there for her. Now, when I called back both of their offices, DeRosa's spokesperson said that Stefanik had sold her soul to the devil, and Stefanik's spokesperson called DeRosa a, quote, federal criminal, and said that she was the Ghislaine of New York City politics, comparing her to, you know, Jeffrey Epstein's famous enabler. So it's clearly they are not friends anymore. But the reason this is important is because now, you know, Stefanik is somebody who, as you've said, is very likely to be elevated into the top echelons of Republican leadership in the House. And this is a major transformation for her. She is somebody who was once considered to be the fresh face of the new wing of the Republican Party, which at the time she was elected was really about trying to modernize the Republican Party to appeal to younger people and people of color and women. And now she seems to have really fully embraced Trumpism as the future of the party.
We can't climb into people's heads, of course, as hard as we try sometimes as journalists. Did Stefanik just read the political room and decide this is the only way that she's going to not only survive, but thrive within the Republican Party?
So there's a couple things to understand about this transformation. The first is that Stefanik is a highly ambitious member of Congress from New York. And what that means is that statewide office is going to be a very tough challenge for her. New York is a deep blue state. It would be very tough for somebody like Elise Stefanik to win a Senate seat or a governor's race in this state. So it was always fairly clear that the path up was to remain in her district and move up through the House. That's one thing to understand. The second thing to understand is that Elise Stefanik's district voted twice for Obama, and then for Trump in 2016, and then again even more heavily for Trump in 2020. So this is a district that has really been emblematic of the swing from Obama to Trump. She has a lot of white rural voters in her district, and her constituents are very, very enthusiastically supportive of Trump. Like you said, it's impossible to climb into to anybody's head as a reporter, but in talking to people who have been close with her, who have worked with her, who are still close with her, there are a couple moments that you can identify where this transition, likely took place, over a period of maybe 18 months. The first was when Trump came with her to Fort Drum to visit her district, in which there's a military base called Fort Drum. Trump came, and it was this huge event that was very successful. And, some people who were close with Stefanik suggested that it's possible she realized, oh, wow, her district really loves the president. And she, until that moment, had been sort of lukewarm on the president. You know, if you look at her statements from 2016 and 2017, she would sort of mildly condemn Trump for some of the more controversial things he did. She would quickly change the subject whenever he came up. She was not really a full-throated supporter of President Trump, and that began to change over the course of 2018. The second thing that happened was that in the 2018 midterms, a lot of the younger, more moderate conservatives who were kind of in the Elise Stefanik vein lost their seats. Many of those conservatives had been much more outspoken against President Trump than Stefanik had been. It surely didn't escape her notice that many of the younger, more moderate, more anti-Trump Republicans didn't survive the 2018 midterms. And again, like I've said, her path forward in a deep blue state is going to be through the House. And then the final and most important moment in this transformation was the 2019 impeachment hearings, in which Stefanik emerged as one of Trump's most devoted and most aggressive defenders. And that made her really an instant star on Fox News. It caught the attention of President Trump, who began to publicly support her. And perhaps most importantly, it turbocharged her grassroots fundraising. She raised $3.2 million in the aftermath of the impeachment hearings, which was about seven times what she had raised in the previous quarter. So that's kind of the, according to people who know her, that's the sort of trajectory of how she moved from being somebody who was sort of Trump agnostic, if not fairly critical of the president, to being somebody who by 2020 was co-chairing his campaign in New York and giving speeches at the RNC in support of him.
I wonder if Stefanik and the people around her have observed that other people that were intensely loyal to Donald Trump in many places along the way have sort of withered on the vine, have suffered greatly. That may not be really on her radar right now. She seems to feel like she's going nowhere but up.
One of the big takeaways from my conversations with people who have known Stefanik over the years is a sense of deep sadness and disappointment. She is somebody who really was, from the time she won her seat in 2014, was one of the brightest stars in the Republican Party. She has really done a lot to recruit women to run as Republicans. She has, she was widely hailed as sort of the face of millennial conservatism. She really tried to get the GOP to kind of meet her generation where they were on issues like climate change, for example. And over the course of the early part of her career, she really cultivated a lot of friends and important mentors who really supported that vision of the future of the Republican Party that she represented. And now many of those people who were so excited about what she represented at that time are deeply concerned at what at the transformation that's taken place. And, you know, one of her former colleagues told me it's embarrassing. It's sad, to see that she had this brand as this sort of moderate millennial Republican who was going to really modernize the party. And she's now utterly lashed herself to Trump. To some of her former allies and mentors, that is a really disturbing narrative.